Good evening. Welcome to Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I'm Bathsheba Monk, your host. My guest this evening is Dr. Stephanie Powell Watts, whose collection of short stories, We Are Taking Only What We Need, is picking up almost every literary award out there, including most recently the Ernest J. Gaines Award for Literary Excellence, as well as being a finalist in the prestigious Penn Hemingway First Book Contest. One of the stories in this collection won the Pushcart Prize in 2007. Last year, Dr. Watts was named the best emerging writer at the Southern Woman Writers Conference. Dr. Watts' work has appeared in Best New Stories from the South anthologies, as well as Oxford American, New Letters, and African American Review. Dr. Watts teaches creative writing at Lehigh University, and we are happy that she lives in the Lehigh Valley, and I am thrilled to meet you and have you as a guest on Lehigh Valley Art Salon. Welcome to the show, Stephanie.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
A writer we both admire, Tim O'Brien,
yes,
said that although lots of people want to write fiction, that only a small percentage succeed, because some people can tell a story and some people actually have an interesting story to tell, and that it's rare to find both in the same person. Obviously, you are one of those people who have both. Since this is your first book, I'm going to make an assumption that you are using lots of lived material. And that's what people are responding to in this work. So tell us something about your background.
Well, I'm from North Carolina, and most of the stories in the book are set in North Carolina. Actually, I think all of them in this book are set in North Carolina.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I do remember that. They're all set in North Carolina, and there are a number of characters that I don't know but are composites of people I know, mm-hmm, and at least related in some ways, not necessarily by blood, to the people that I know in that, mm-hmm, region. So they're stories that I haven't exactly lived them, but I've seen them enacted in different kinds of ways.
Right. The material was all there.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that I notice that reviewers and people who are commenting on your book make a big thing about is your religion. And it seemed like you, mm-hmm, got religion as a teenager. So, mm-hmm, do you want to talk about that?
Well, when I was growing up, my biggest influence was probably my grandmother, and she was AME Methodist, African Methodist Episcopal, and part of that church for a long time. But when my parents divorced, my mother became a Jehovah's Witness, mm-hmm, and that was the religion of my tween age and, uh-huh, young adulthood.
Uh-huh.
So it's a big influence on the kinds of things that I write. The idea that what do you do after you don't have the same kind of faith that you ardently believed as a child? What do you do when,
right,
that's...
Yeah, in one of your stories, I mean, it's interesting. As a writer, I can certainly see becoming religious because it's a narrative of, mm-hmm, some sort that, mm-hmm, you want to be a part of. But a proselytizing religion, and, mm-hmm, as you say in one of your stories too, you know that nobody really wanted you to come to their living,
right,
room. That's an annoyance.
That's,
I think,
right,
you made this great statement, you know, that you felt like you were aiming a gun at them when you opened your Bible. It was a loaded,
right,
weapon. So,
yeah.
So why a proselytizing religion?
Well, I think there one of the things that appeals to me about that kind of faith is you feel like you're helping people all the time. You feel like you have something that's worthy and that will change their lives, make it better, certainly different and almost certainly better, and you, mm-hmm, want to give that to them. And sometimes you recognize maybe this is not a gift that you want, but, mm-hmm, but maybe it's a gift that you need. And,
right,
so if you have that, if you really feel that, it's great. It's a great moment in your life if you believe it.
If you believe it.
Yeah.
And yet, I think I read in an interview you did that that's no longer true, that you don't did now starting to write fiction, mm-hmm, like coincide with your losing that narrative, the religious narrative?
Not exactly. I mean, I've always written fiction in some way, but I think that it's enhanced it. And so you know how it is as a writer, everything's material, right?
Right.
so this is just another part of the narrative. And I think it's an undercurrent of regret and sadness, and who doesn't want that as a fiction writer?
Right, exactly. You want to
not
tap
in your
into
life,
those.
But
right,
as a fiction writer, you really want that, you know?
Yeah.
So it's helped me to think about things in a different way, and I think helped my fiction.
Yeah, that loss kind,
yeah,
of almost, yeah. So what were you reading when you said, and I'm assuming you were reading something when you said, I want to make people feel the way that piece of writing made me feel.
What was I reading? Where was that?
I don't know if you ever said that, but I was just assuming that, you know.
Oh.
I was reading something really trashy when I said that.
I don't know. Well, I mean, there's so many books that I read as a very young person mm-hmm. that just kind of blew me away.
And like what?
One is Thomas Wolfe, Look Homeward, Angel.
Uh-huh.
I loved him so much, and especially as a 16-year-old. And I certainly didn't understand so much of it. Mm-hmm. And he has interesting things about the South and racial dynamic and, you know, just all kinds of things. And then just the sentences wash over you. They're so uh-huh. beautiful mm-hmm. and beautifully written. And, you know, it's a perfect age to read this kind of thing, you know,
to get
really fall in love with writing. And I never thought it for a minute that I would be able to do that, or that, you know, that was something that I would even aspire to. I just loved
it. Oh, really?
No.
So when did you start? When did you start writing your first serious short story?
Oh, I was probably in early college. You're trying to write, but I really, even then, I didn't think I would be a writer. I thought that I would write and write for myself. And, you know, I would always have that because I always have. I have four younger brothers, and I'd write for them. We'd put on shows.
Skits.
Yeah, that's right. Sometimes musicals, sometimes dance marathons.
No kidding.
And my brothers, they write too. And, you know, we'd all get together do this. You know, we lived on a dirt road. We only had one channel on the television.
So you had to amuse yourself. Right.
Yeah. So.
So what was your first published piece then? Is that what gave you some encouragement to go on and finish this collection?
Well, the very first thing I published, I guess, was at Obsidian 3. It's at North Carolina State University. It's mm-hmm. It's a journal of the Black diaspora. And I published a piece there. And, you know, it was really thrilling. But,
it's thrilling.
You know, and to see it and to hold it. And there's my name. And, you know, just that whole thing. It's really wonderful. But I don't know. Maybe some things come to me slowly, you know. Some things I think I get and I'm smart about. But then there's the whole other universe of other things that come to me slowly. And I don't know. I just didn't really think of myself. And it's hard to visualize something that you have not seen. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in my family, in my world, there weren't writers. People did things that were practical and useful.
Right,
in different kinds
with
of
their
ways.
Hands.
yeah. My dad makes furniture, you know, that sort of thing. So this, you know, there was almost a frivolousness to it that, at least that's what I thought then, that I just didn't feel like that I could do. And I'm the oldest, and I'm, you know, first generation college student, all that kind of thing.
Right. So you're like an inspiration now for your brothers, I'm sure.
They would never say that.
It's too competitive.
Never.
Oh, that's very funny. I don't think that anybody who writes fiction wants to be pigeonholed as a spokesperson mm-hmm. for their race or class that they were born into. And yet when you're using material that's so obviously personal, I'm not saying this stuff happened to you, but stuff that you've observed,
mm-hmm.
You're also writing other people's stories, not just your own. So I have two questions here. One, has anyone who saw themselves in your stories felt betrayed by your portrayal of them?
No, I guess I didn't do a good enough job of, because nobody has actually seen themselves, you know?
That's funny, isn't it, how that works sometimes?
Yeah, I have had things, not in this book, actually, but I have had things that people have said, oh, well, that didn't happen that way, or I didn't do that, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
But not in this book. And I like the way you said that we are writing other people's stories, because we are. And that's what makes it so wonderful when you get to share them and reflect them back to them, mm-hmm. especially when you have groups that don't get to hear their stories that much. You know, they're not, you know, they're not the flashiest stories in the world.
Right. So they're happy just to see their life portrayed. Because this
yes.
is the world that you created in here. I'm not going to even say that you're portraying, that you created is something that we don't see very often in modern fiction mm-hmm. anyway. So people, you know, they must be happy that they're being witnessed. That's
yes.
like the big thing in life is oh, you see me.
That's exactly it. I'm not invisible. I matter and I'm important. And here's proof.
Right. You know? Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. The second question on the same theme is that the narrator in these stories, while the name changes, is essentially the same person, a naive observer of life sort of trapped on the dirt road. Mm-hmm. And yet in front of me is this beautiful, accomplished woman. And so do people make assumptions about you based on the narrator in the story? And how does that make you feel if they do?
Well, I'm a little bit mixed on it, you know, mm-hmm. Because one, I do write about that girl who was at a certain place in her life. She's a girl woman, you know, she's an adolescent. Right. She hasn't really gotten out into the world, but she wants something. And, you know, so I do write about her. And I did feel that very much myself. So on the one hand, I feel like, oh, okay, that's fine. you know, that you've recognized something. But also, this is, as you say, it is a creation. And I just want that to be clear. Oh, mostly because my grandmother would be very angry with me if she thought I was talking about her like this. No, I'm just kidding. But you know, so I do, I am very kind of torn about it, you know, as I do want the portrayals. I really am excited when somebody comes to me at a reading or something and says, this experience, this happened to me, or this experience is so much
so
like
resonates.
That.
Yeah, yeah. So it resonates
I
with
love
you.
That. I mean, that's great, but I don't want people to think that it is just me.
That it's just
it's
you.
Just a part of me.
Right. I think we have to take a break. This is Bathsheba Monk on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Art Salon.
WDIY is pleased to partner with the Zollner Arts Center, featuring the East Winds Quintet, presenting All American on Sunday, February 24th at 3 p.m. For information, 610-758-2787 or zollnerartscenter.org.
This is Bathsheba Monk on WDIY's Lehigh Valley Art Salon. My guest today is Dr. Stephanie Powell Watts, author of the collection of short stories, We Are Taking Only What We Need. Stephanie, we were talking before about assumptions that people make about you. Even though you're writing fiction, they think it's you. And on the subject of assumptions, in an interview you said that Northerners, and by Northerners I'm assuming that you mean your students in your classes at Lehigh, have assumptions about Southerners and the Black Southern experience. What assumptions did you have about the North before you came here? That we're really friendly and nice, and we invite you over for dinner as soon as we meet you.
That's right. That's exactly what I thought, completely. Well, actually, I get all my information about the North from the Jersey Shore, that television show.
Oh, really?
So that's all I know.
That's pretty accurate, actually.
Oh, that's so sad. Oh, God.
But were those assumptions that you had, were they verified or were they kind of busted?
No. I mean, I don't know. I just sort of felt like people are the same when you know, kind of scratch off the outside.
Yeah.
You know, I live in Fountain Hill and my neighbors, they weren't Southern. They didn't behave in the kind of Southern way, but they're lovely. They're very sweet to us. They're, you know, but they're not the same kind of, they just don't have the same kind of affect, but they're wonderful people. So I don't know. There's probably a lot of the sameness.
Yeah, I think you're being polite too. Because we all do have those kind of assumptions.
Yeah.
But then the question is, like, now that you've been here and you've lived in the Lehigh Valley for how long now?
For 8 years.
Yeah. So you're a very different person than the woman who was in the South and having these experiences on the dirt road, then going to school and going to doctorate school and everything, getting all your education. So now when you go to write, how do you think that's going to change?
I think there've been a lot of changes, and one of the things that has been surprising to me is how vividly my past has come to me now that I'm away from it in some ways. And I mean, literally away from it, geographically away from it, but also removed from it in lots of different kinds of ways, socioeconomically, at least a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's been very interesting to see that world come to me and the stories of that world and how much different and more meaningful they are to me.
Now you got some distance from them and you can see them. So I think that, I don't know who said this. You probably know every writer keeps writing the same story over. They keep answering the same question, I guess. So what's your question?
You know, I was talking to this total name drop. And but when I was a graduate student, I got to meet John Updike.
Oh, really?
I'm
impressed.
So much. He was a lovely, lovely guy. Very sweet and down to earth and, you know, just kind of remarkable in that way. I really loved him. And he was talking about those kinds of issues, you know.
So what's your question?
He was saying that that's the thing that you have to find out what your questions are, you know.
Right.
And those are the things that you will write about for the rest of your life.
Right.
What those
right.
questions are, and I don't know completely, but I know they're about loss, and I know they're about trying to define my place in the world as a spiritual person or even a religious person. What that means, and how it means, and how it's going to come about in the future. I know those are big issues to me. And family, can you ever escape them? Can you ever love them in the way that you did when you weren't thinking about it?
Right.
When they were just there, and you.
Well, those questions really they permeate your collection. Now we are taking only what we need.
Yeah.
And so, would you mind reading us? A little bit from your book here, and my favorite story is the first story. Do you want to tell us about that and then read something from it?
Oh, sure. This is the first story is called Family Museum of the Ancient Postcards, and it's about a young woman, an adolescent. She's 14, and she meets an older woman in the family, and her name is Aunt Jenny, and Aunt Jenny is 41. And Aunt Jenny is anomalous in the family because she doesn't have children. She's never married. And so all the other women, you know, were married in their early 20s, sometimes even earlier. And so she's a very different kind of being in the family. Also, she lives with her mother, who isn't very nice to her. And she treats her as if she were still a child. So there was a woman in my hometown who lived this kind of life, at least in some parts. She had never married and lived alone and lived with her mother. And she was fascinating to me. So she's not Aunt Jenny, but I mean, she's passed away now, but they both are. But she's not Aunt Jenny, but that whole idea just fascinated me.
Right, okay.
So that's where the story comes from. Almost 8 months after her departure, Aunt Jenny came back to us, with her lips grim and set in a freeze that even death couldn't remove. Aunt Jenny rode shotgun beside her mother in the passenger seat of the Buick, her clothes and pillowcases in the back seat, the hard case luggage, a high school graduation present, forgotten in the rush. "My nerves can't take all this," Aunt Jenny's mother said, as she parked in the drive, theatrically lumbering to her chair in the front room. "And you ought not put me through it." Her clothes out of the car, Aunt Jenny rested in her room, tried not to look at the lumpy pillowcases leaking her panties, and hastily stuffed polyester from their open tops. She kicked the bag off the edge of the bed, and the rags exploded like confetti on the floor. "I'm back," she whispered, sure her father had heard. We wouldn't say it to her. We are not cruel. But we knew all along Aunt Jenny would return. Late marriages can't take, we nodded in agreement. The old are tired, sapless, and try it. Be our guest, but you can't make it without hope, the antidote to despair that the old have irretrievably lost. Though we wanted different for her, we knew Aunt Jenny's story would take one of just a few predictable shapes. The way they told it, Gerald beat Aunt Jenny for being tall, for glancing at him without tenderness as he drifted to sleep, for trying to prove that he could be loved. Aunt Jenny would not say, but something brought her home in a hurry. We thought we understood. Aunt Jenny tried. You have to give her that. We saw her trying, felt her stretching for something good. We knew that what she wanted was that glad day when the life with Gerald that she knew was just around the corner finally materialized, poof, in a cloud of sorcerer's smoke. You'll learn fooling with low-class niggers, Aunt Jenny's mother said, the smug joy in her heart obvious on her face, a cruel, cutting brightness like a sunny winter sky. Now Aunt Jenny would have no reason to ever again refute what her mother told her.
Thank you. That's one of That's actually my favorite story in this collection. Oh. And Aunt Jenny is so real. And now you told me she wasn't really real. And I'm happy about that.
Yeah, me too.
It was very sad. And all of your stories have a kind of sadness about them. Did you feel that when you were writing them, or did you just feel the love of the characters?
I absolutely love the characters, and especially Aunt Jenny. And I so wanted her to have happiness. I really tried to figure out a way for her to have happiness, but I just couldn't figure it out. At least, except for these short bursts of, you know, joyous moments.
Yeah, little triumphs.
You know, just little triumphs, that's right. But other than that, I just couldn't figure it out for her. But I do think that the stories are permeated with a kind of sadness, but I think it's hard to live without it, you know?
Right.
And those little moments are then so precious. You know, in this story, there's a moment when the two women are together and they're in at a grapevine. And it's just such a peaceful, nice moment and of connection. And, you know, you really cherish that in a world that is full of sadness.
Right. But there's humor in here, too. I don't want the listeners to get the feeling that it's all sadness. Yeah. It's like life. It's happy, sad, right?
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So this book is getting a lot of acclaim. Did that surprise you?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yes. It's well-deserved, I must say.
Thank you.
And so now your punishment for all that is you get to do it again. So what are you working on now?
No. I am working on a novel. It's a very different kind of thing. And so I've actually finished it, but I don't like it yet. So I'm still working on it.
Okay. Is that set in North Carolina as well?
It is. It's set in the same neighborhood as most of these stories, the same community at least.
Uh-huh. And may I ask the main character, is that... I hate this question as a writer myself. Is that the you character, or are you stepping away and letting somebody else talk?
There are two main characters, and one is there's a younger woman. She's in her early 20s, and there's her father. Mm-hmm. And they're the two main characters. And the story is told from their voices.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And so we can, after you do some rewrite on this, we can look forward to seeing this.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, that's wonderful. And now, where can people learn more about you and buy your book?
It's on Amazon, my publisher, which is Bookmark. I'm at Lehigh.
So you have a website on Lehigh?
Mm-hmm,
okay.
I do.
And they can find out about you there, and they can take your classes at Lehigh? are they just restricted to, you don't do any... classes for the general public,
no.
I tell you. Oh, that's too bad. That's our loss. Okay.
And, that's nice. Thank you.
And are you having any readings? What's up next?
Let's see. Next, I'm going to Wilkes. I'll be reading there in a couple of weeks.
Oh, when is that exactly?
The 7th, February 7th.
February 7th. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. And after that, I'm going to Bucks County Community College.
Oh, fantastic. Okay.
That sounds fun.
And when is that?
That's... I'm sorry.
Okay, check your website, right, for that
check
one.
Okay. But I have... what else do I have coming up? The Virginia Book Festival.
Oh, that's exciting. That's a big one.
Yeah, that'll be fun. And I'm reading at the Chautauqua Institute. They do 9 writers and... Then there's a week with each writer, and so I'll be reading there, and
you'll be on a panel, and so you're busy, right?
Yeah.
That's your victory lap is doing a lot of readings and stuff. Well, congratulations
Thank
on all
so
the
much.
Success of this collection. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
And I would encourage everybody to check it out and read it. And so my guest today has been Dr. Stephanie Powell Watts, author of the award-winning collection of short stories, We Are Taking Only What We Need. This is Bathsheba Monk on Lehigh Valley Art Salon.